Actually, though, before we bring Matoa up, which I know we're all looking forward to this evening, we're going to sort of tie this whole evening in with what's happening here in New York City and across the continent and basically across the world. And I think Deborah brought it up when she was talking about how Mother Earth is speaking to us, that these strange weather phenomena and these huge storms that are crossing the continents and the tsunamis and the earthquakes and the tornadoes in weird places and hurricanes in the Bronx and tornadoes in Brooklyn and earthquakes in New Jersey and Washington. We're being spoken to and we're being warned by Mother Earth that the time is coming that we as human beings have to refine our place on this earth. And I think that it's been an interesting year. We've seen, especially over the last, 2 months yesterday, the Occupy Wall Street movement that started here in New York City, which I prefer to call the Decolonize Wall Street movement. These people are clearly in an alliance with us and clearly have a vision too of changing things. We're hoping it's not just a change that reflects a redistribution of wealth or a re-establishment of the way things have always been, but by spreading it around more, but really looking at capitalism and the inherent destruction therein in a consumer-driven society. And as indigenous peoples, this is what we have been fighting ever since contact with Europeans from all around the world, as the brother was just talking about. The same issues exist in the Pacific Rim, in Southeast Asia, in Africa, in South America. Everywhere there are indigenous people, the land is being fought for and the water is being fought for. So this evening, I asked one of my sisters, who I had the pleasure of meeting just a couple years ago, Janine Yazzie Collymore, who is here in New York City at Barnard. And I was immediately impressed with not only her beauty, but her intelligence and her commitment to her people. She's an activist who's being educated here in New York, but she goes home every summer and works on her own land with her people in the way that Deborah was describing. She's here tonight with her husband and son. Take a bow back there. And we were together, as I told you earlier, at Occupy Wall Street during the Columbus Day or Indigenous Peoples Day discussions that happened there. And we met a very nice young man, Cesar, if you'd like to come up here too, who is, I believe, he's called one of the facilitators of the General Assembly at Occupy Wall Street. And they're just going to spend some time talking a little bit and open it up for discussion, and then we'll bring Matteo up here. We are, as usual, running late, but welcome to the Indigenous World.
Oh,
I'm sorry, one last thing before we get started here again. As you can see, Marge, raise your hand. Yay, Marge, who's been making this delicious chili for us. So if you haven't had an opportunity to get a bowl, get back there and get yourself some food while we're carrying on. Thank you.
That is how I introduce myself and my culture with respect to my ancestors and to my mother and father, who obviously I wouldn't be here without them. And I just want to say thank you to Deborah and Kent and Cesar for inviting me to be here and to speak. This is an honor to be welcome among my elders who have done such phenomenal work in advocating for our people and for our communities and for our earth all around the world. Thank you for your wonderful performance. It was amazing. You have a voice like of an angel. I don't think that's said very often to men. But just the spirit of your people really shows in your music, and that's a very powerful thing to share. I'm not sure if very many people here are aware, but the Maori people are at the forefront of the battle against GMO, genetically modified organisms, and the way DNA is being intermarried with like human DNA is being mixed with animal DNA to prevent animals from getting a lot of the diseases that they get when they're clustered in huge small spaces together and grown unsustainably. And that's a very noble thing, because Australia and New Zealand have become the nations that have welcomed these transnational organizations that experiment with our food. And we have people, very strong and proud people there that are fighting against that development. And I'd like to say thank you, to extend my thanks to you and your people. All right, so we're here just to discuss decolonization and how this rhetoric fits or does not fit into the current Occupy movements that are spreading across America. It's a very empowering thing to know that people can finally overcome these boundaries that have historically kept us separated and join together and take a common position against unsustainable institutions that have historically disenfranchised minority groups and women and poor people in general just to sustain itself. And I guess I'll just start off sharing about my personal experience down there. As you know, I'm a very proud Dene woman. I'm wearing right now what that's my son, it's okay. he probably wanted to come up here. But I'm wearing what would be a more modern grandma look in honor of my grandmother, you know, who has a very high fashion sense. But every time I went down to Occupy Wall Street, I dressed in our traditional rug dress. And with my moccasins and my jewelry, that's my protection, because it comes from Mother Earth. Turquoise is very important to us, because it's mine from our region, and it represents our homeland and that connection we always carry around with us. And it was, I have to say to you, it was an embarrassing experience more than it was an empowering one, because it was very clear that what you thought would become a liberated space through an Occupy movement still replicated a lot of the same values and the same ignorance that is present in institutions that are the 99% is supposed to stand against. And among the horrible comments that I kept getting, like the most prevalent question was, why are you dressed like an Indian? And that's very hard to do when you go down there with the intention to stand in solidarity with the people who you feel are finally opening their eyes to a struggle that people like Deborah and Kent and their ancestors and my ancestors and the Maori ancestors have been engaged in since colonization. And to stand against these institutions, you need to stand for something. And I know there's been a lot of developments lately down at OWS, and I wanted you to not only update us on the status of what's been happening, but also to give us your perspective, because obviously that was my perspective coming from the outside, but you're actually involved with the facilitation process and the bringing together the movement. So your perspective on how this movement should encapsulate the values of standing for something, like how Indigenous movements stand against the values of greed. We stand for self-respect, for respect of Mother Earth. And those are the values that guide our movements, but those are values that I haven't seen expressed very clearly or concisely in the OWS movement. And I was just wondering what your take was on that, or if you think that that's a problem you guys are working to overcome.
Well, thank you very much, first. I'm very glad to be here. Thanks for the music, the food, and the excellent company, and all the issues that we are dealing with here. Okay.
Closer, please.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm very glad to Ken and all of you who have organized this. So, well, yes, I think actually there is something about this movement, and first of all, I'd like you to know I'm speaking for myself. I do not represent nobody over there, and that's basically how the organization goes. Basically, it's a very loose organization, although there may have been some people at the beginning triggering the event. This is one place where the organization is belongs to those who participate in the organizations. So, yes, there are issues and there are internal issues, and I will not defend any of the things we are fighting. And actually, that's also one attitude that should change within any movement, is that we are maybe expecting all the solutions to be resolved from above, but there is a lot of conflict internal and a lot of education that has to happen internally, and that's a dialogue that has been open. Sometimes the movement is portrayed as being quite broad. Well, I like it sometimes to be a little bit narrow, and we want to get out of some people who, if it cannot be convinced to be like not to have solidarity for others or an understanding, or we will not tolerate any racism or any of those attitudes. And not just the overly one, I think we have to engage in a self-education, all of us, I would have to say. Not just to fight the over racism or bigotry or whichever, but just to prevent any of these unconscious things that we do to each other. And it's not just about race or, you know, or prejudice. It's just prejudice about age or looks or whichever. So there is all that thing going on internally, and that's a conversation that is happening online, mm-hmm. and it's happening on the ground. And there are these conflicts because, for example, causes like the people of color may have, there is a caucus there, one group, who wants to advance on the problems, and they want to see how they are understood, and basically they have their saying, and there are things that they may not like. Well, the best way to go about it is just to say so. And my invitation to anybody here is that I think it's a good time to bring in all the struggles together. Everything is interconnected. I mean, we have been talking, we have been hearing very interesting talk from Deborah about all these environmental issues, this disregard by people. It's kind of a universal thing happening. You name it, the spill in the Gulf of Mexico, or you name it, the persons, it's all over the place. So what we have to change is all the dynamics. And my invitation was that if you think, I mean, just go down there and maybe see if you can synergize with what is happening there, and if you can bring your contribution in there. I think indigenous people have a lot to say, and they have gone through a lot of oppression, so I think that they should be definitively a voice in the movement.
That's definitely something that I know that me and Kent hoped to do when we went down there on Anti-Columbus Day. And it was a very unique experience using the people's mic for the first time and trying to talk to everyone, because then you just get on this roll and then everyone starts repeating what you're saying and you're like, wait, what? What? What happened? Who said that? You know? But I understand the challenges of trying to keep a movement decentralized, because that's been a challenge among indigenous communities as well when we first started trying to organize ourselves, when we were first gathered onto reservations. You know, it was like, how were we going to maintain our egalitarian style of political systems and social systems without replicating, you know, the imbalance that comes from having a centralized governing or a centralized institution that oversees everything else around you. And that's been one of our major problems. But as you can see, there have been phenomenal advances that come through self-education. Like Deborah said, you know, they printed out the application themselves and went through it word by word as a family. And that's something that I think a lot of people are missing from the message at OWS is that it's not only about coming together and being angry about something. It's about coming together and creating a space where you learn and you exchange in dialogue and you go home with these new questions and you look it up and do your own research and enlighten yourself. I had a chance to enter into a lot of dialogues about decolonization, and most often the question is, even among the people I'm speaking to, is, what does that mean? You know, what are you talking about when you say decolonize? Like, does that mean I have to give up my house or my real estate and not let my kids inherit it? And does that mean I have to go back to Europe when my parents have been here for hundreds of years? And like Deborah says, you know, like, our fight against the Washichu, the greedy ones, is not about race. It's about a mentality. It's about an unsustainable mentality that has given these institutions the power that they have to protect the 1% and disenfranchise the 99% from, you know, the same resources that are granted to us from the same entity, the same goddess we call Mother Earth. And to us, decolonization means a complete restructuring of these institutional systems, because their values, as Deborah has illuminated, promote disenfranchisement for the benefit of the greedy. And decolonization is an act. It's a action verb. You know, it's something you do to recognize that the history of colonization has been inherited by all members of the country, this country and elsewhere around the world, and that we have an individual responsibility to learn how that it's affected our communities and our lives, and how we can change the ways that, you know, this trickle down greedy economics, you know, the only thing that's trickled down is not the money, but just this idea that you need to consume more than your fair share, and or get more than your fair share, and that's the thing that has destroyed communities. And the Occupy Wall Street movement, like you said, is a coalition of all these different groups that are coming together with their own agenda and their own motives. But even then, you can take small steps, as Indigenous peoples have when we're put on reservations with different, are forced to deal with different clan groups that we didn't normally interact with, or like when we're removed to Oklahoma and forced to deal with different nations. You create a new sense of community. You become more inclusive in, you know, what your community stands for and what's best for the well-being of your community. And I think that the OWS movement and the Occupy movements that are spreading across the nation would not only benefit from that wisdom that can be given to them from Indigenous peoples, but could also see for themselves, you know, how standing in solidarity with Indigenous peoples automatically furthers their cause that will benefit themselves and their families and their future generations, and protect a real sustainable prosperity for their communities. And with the threat that is now being posed against the Occupy Wall Street movement here in Zuccotti Park, you know, people are making complaints that you're occupying a space that really, you know, like, whether you agree with the people who live in that area or not, belongs to part of a community. And so it's becoming a movement, at least from my perspective, and we'll open up for dialogue in a little while. It's becoming a movement that's replicating not only the values of the system they're standing against, but also the actions that system takes to encroach upon territories that aren't their own, and not for the well-being of the people within the area, but, you know, for their own personal reasons. And there's a way to transform the Occupy Wall Street movement using social media. Like I was just talking with Othel, with one of my good friends that I went to Columbia, social media and bringing in the youth a lot more and engaging them in these causes, because they know how to, I can type away like this, like crazy on Facebook, you know? And it's like, when you do that, you take away the act of occupying spaces and replicating a colonial system of dominance. And you unoccupy minds, you decolonize minds, and you start to spread these questions and these ideals that should help people take the path to educating themselves. And I know that the social networks have worked for the movement in terms of, you know, illuminating police roundups and the evacuation of Zuccotti Park. But have any of the members, the people who are actually involved on a day-to-day basis with it, used it to their advantage to make the movement more organized? Like,
I think so. I think there is a growing organization online. Like right now, for example, most of the groups, and if you want to just set up an indigenous group belonging within that movement, you are welcome to do so. And I encourage you to do so. You would want to really bring the voice, not that the voice as it's heard, but it's heard loudly from within. I think the best strategy is just do it yourself. Like this movement is, as I said before, is shaped by those who contribute to the movement. So if you have something positive to contribute to it, do so, and don't ask nobody to ask. And when you something working wrong, you know, it's all volunteer work. So yes, go ahead and do it. And sometimes, yes, you can say something that is could be done better, and you don't have the time, and you say, hey, could you do that better, and that's it. So that's the solution, that's the movement. So the movement is whoever shows up. So, and online right now, for example, in the webpage, there are the different groups of the New York General Assembly, and there could be an indigenous group, and it will be a question of organizing, and then having public meetings and having whichever you have to say and advertise. And there is actually so much activity that sometimes it's split so thin, like we have so many interesting things happening at the same time. So that's the online thing, although to be honest, I think the physical presence and the gathering together and the speaking face to face, there is no substitute for that. So that was the question of having a stand-up on the street, that yes, it was an occupation of private public space, if you wish, and I think it was a good strategy because it did mobilize people together. It did brought lots of causes. We have when there was the Troy Davis brutal death sentence that was implemented regardless of all the dogs. Well, there was a lot of mobilization around that in the park. So there are many different causes that converge there, and there is some solidarity between the different causes happening, and there is a lot of education so that is going on in the plaza. So yes, you have those affinity groups that are working together, and they have you know, the calls that they were having before, but there's a lot of people who have not been involved, you know, who is starting to get more engaged, and actually in my opinion, who is just working away from staying at home in the computer and reading the latest New York Times article, and writing 300 comments there, oh yeah, okay, and everybody looks so great, and then did this, but what change have you accomplished? How have you moved your agenda? So we have had so many years of actually this computer activism that is taking us nowhere. So we really have to talk to each other and talk face to face and see where we agree, where we disagree with the transgenics or with each other. So we have to have these discussions and respect each other's opinions and just empower ourselves and educate ourselves. So I think I have to disagree. I think that for the case of the action of occupying the public space, I think it was just coming out of the isolation where we are all embedded in our own interests and watch our TV, take our VR entertainment, and you know, while we are having just and yes, it's not all a case of wealth or just okay, well, we want to live a little bit, but it's a case of justice. We are stripping out education. You are born now here in, depending on which neighborhood, you are condemned almost to be a virtual illiterate. And it's gonna get worse. We're firing all the teachers. So, well, you are born under this population, which, well, historically had from history, slavery, genocides, people from coming from other places across, working here as undocumented, okay, not illegal. Okay. We have stuck some stigma to you. Now, you know, you have to swallow and take it everything that we want. So I think it's part of the same problem. We have been subdivided along boundaries, about all these artificial boundaries that this country is distinct. But We are people all over the place, and I think we should stand together. And this movement is trying to do that. I'm sure that there are going to be problems, and there's a lot to be done.
I'm going to start asking for comments from the audience. How many people in here have been down to Occupy Wall Street? It's like about maybe 50-60% of the audience members. Hi, who would like to share their impression or their experience of being down there? You're the first one with your hands up, so you wanna come up?
But it just so happens that my sister's alma mater is Barnard, and she works for Columbia. But it's funny how coming from a family that had civil rights of the 60s, how organized they were from the beginning in a lot of different ways, because you've got to realize that they movement started out of the porter cars and wanting better wages, better jobs. Also, just being able to adapt because of the color of our skin in society. And right now, I'm really happy for young people. Finally, they're stepping up. A lot of things have been given, and they realize they're getting taken away. So my question is, now that you have a movement, and now that you have people coming together, why aren't you putting them to work and putting them to the things that they are? You're never going to get rid of greed. The seven deadly sins are here. The only way you do that is by education. You can do it, but that's a utopian thought, I believe. But what you can do is teach the young people how to give back and move into different ways. And to also honor all types of cultures, because they are living among their own culture, as you said, from the different areas they come from and different movements. But it's funny, the people are outside. I said the one thing you want out of this movement is a job. So, and they told me I was wrong. They don't want a job. Yeah, you laugh. Because that's, if I laughed at them, what would they? Yeah, I mean, there is a way. You're gathering people together. So now you have a point to educate, now you have a point to incorporate and empower them to go out in their communities and start to work a job, because that's what they want.
Actually, yeah, thank you very much. So the thing, that's very interesting, and actually I think that's where, if this gets into something really a real transformation, will be whenever it spreads truly to the boroughs, which is started to somehow happen in the Bronx. There is something going on. I think that's one of the most interesting groups. There is something more in Queens, with different communities that started to implement. And there is one that, which actually going to what you are saying, Organize for Jobs, Occupy for Jobs, they just call it, an impact of whichever. But the idea is that, yes, people is needing jobs, and that's actually their main motto and their main strategy. And they go with different tactics. So there is no single tactic, and I think here everybody should just go with their own understanding of what will work best. And there's people who's requesting a works program for, instead of just trying to get more money to those who already have too much, just generate a works program across the nation. And I think all those are, workable proposals. And as I said, any proposal, this is working with people who just gets involved, trying to get that objective. And the different strategies are all valid. Everybody should be trying. I think too that we have to be careful when we talk about any kind of economic change or economic development, because it's not just about jobs. You know, with the XL pipeline, the unions and the miners are very upset with the activism that has occurred, because we've literally taken their jobs from them as they see it. And truthfully, we have, in the fact that it's been stopped so far. But it's not just about making opportunities for people to get, like I said earlier, more of that 1%, or just redistributing that 1%. It's again, as Janine was just saying, we have to begin somewhere in our minds to decolonize the way we look at the world and the way we look at work. As the brother just pointed out too, that you go back to your community and you start there. I think that's one of the really hard things to understand, especially growing up in an American society where it really is about what you can gather around you that is the most important thing, not about who you're connected to or what your responsibilities are to the planet or to you, the generations to come, or any of the things that we try to hold dear. I think that I just want to add too that Cesar, I really appreciate you being here this evening for us and coming to us and talking to us. I think that we have a really interesting opportunity as this movement develops and we continue this dialogue. Hopefully, I know it's going on in Denver and in Boston and other places, between the indigenous communities there and the Occupy movements in those particular cities. But I think we might have another opportunity here to kind of hopefully recreate the encounter again between indigenous and non-indigenous peoples in a way that maybe is a little more open and a little more balanced. And in this tiny room tonight, I hope that's a little bit of what we've been trying to do. Any more questions out there or comments? Yeah.
Just touching on Janine and Ken saying, in terms of the movement not being about jobs, I think that this is recreating the same system that we're currently living in. The civil rights movement was about jobs for African Americans, and now 40 years later, here we are again about jobs. It's not really about disenfranchised people getting jobs, you're just getting jobs for Verizon or Time Warner Cable, and you're just working for the same system that put these things in place. It's about rethinking what wealth really is, because wealth isn't making money, wealth is being able to spend time with your family, and wealth is being able to, you know, go out back and see grizzly bears still. Mm-hmm. And is that going to be available? Is that kind of wealth going to be available for our children? Is our children going to be able to go and drink fresh water from the street? Or are they going to have to go and get fresh water to ship it from China, or the water that's made through the machine, because there's no longer any fresh water because we all went for it? Or because we all wanted to work for Verizon? Or we all wanted to get, you know, that much more of a piece of the pie? It's about getting the pie, it's about reestablishing what the pie is. And I think that should be really focused about the Occupy Wall Street movement. Because if it's not, 30 years from now, my kids will be sitting down in front of some, you know, park, because all that happened is now, instead of having 1% of people own most of the wealth, we're going to have 5% of people own most of the wealth. And is that what we want? I don't really, you know.
Excellent. Yeah, exactly.
I have one thing. Jobs, I want to say, is not working, as you said, for the man.
Yeah.
Jobs is to be able and capable of doing something, whether that's volunteering or taking care of that child on the stage. So, well, you, and you do not have to get paid. Believe me, many grandmothers have taken care of children for their children. So their child, their grandchild, will grow up strong. So I do believe it is a job. And I think we need to understand what a job is. It's not always getting paid. And maybe the job to stop those oil sands.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the job that.
See, this is why rhetoric is so important, and this is why understanding the history of this country and the founding of these institutions is also so important. Because as indigenous peoples, you know, our ancestors handed down the stories of how these conquests of our lands took place, and they knew that what was being replaced were community values for private property and individualism. Or what was being considered jobs was replacing what was supposed to be our responsibilities to our communities, to society, and to the earth. And, you know, all this convolution of meaning and the way that we've inherited it now, you know, people, like, I'm not going to say that people who are just asking for a job at Verizon are, you know, like, just as evil as the 1%. They are misinformed and misguided, but there needs to be some way to create a dialogue or to create some sort of educational format where we can help these people see that you're looking for a job because you're told that's what you need to do to take care of your family. You know, but taking care of your family is not an individual responsibility. It's impossible being an individual and raising a healthy, you know, strong family, healthy, strong children. It takes a community to raise a child. That is one of the things I think a lot of our indigenous tribes also share and hold in common. And understanding that, you know, it takes a community to be inclusive, to create an open environment. And that's what I was trying to touch upon. I don't know if anyone else wants to share their experience. I guess I need to go back to Occupy Wall Street more and not dress like an Indian. maybe I'll feel more a part of it as opposed to a novelty. But that's one of the things that I know makes my people strong on my reservation, and that got me through college and got me through the struggle with these institutions that didn't understand what it meant to be an indigenous activist and the philosophies and the culture and the rich history that I fight for. And I kept trying to explain this because I have a community. I have a community that's dependent upon every action that every individual takes, a community that supported me to get my education so I could come back and help find solutions. And it made me realize that there are so many people who lack that. A lot of the 99% are people who see themselves as disenfranchised individuals, not people who are being denied the right to build healthy, sustainable communities that will be inherited for the prosperity of their children. And I think that's something that we need to voice stronger, I guess, down at OWS. And you're right, if that's what it takes, then I guess I'm just going to need more people to help me be the people's mic out there. And well, hopefully we'll get this message across.
Mic check. All right, we are running very late this evening, and so I'm going to try and wrap this up here. Cesar, would you like to say a final word of parting to us?
No, I think you are putting it quite straight to the point. I think it's this sense of community, and it does not just this community. We live in New York, many communities, sometimes a little bit narrow to their own interests, be their job, their unions, or so, all kinds of communities and interests created. I think we have to bring a sense of global community. We are dealing with the destruction of the earth, and obviously, our misrepresentatives are not taking good care of that. So there is no solution. So the call is for let's take back. The losing is not just economic. We have just given up our possibility of organizing ourselves and take political power to implement true democracy. Because right now this is not democratic anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are, and that's the change. And yes, it has become radical to be for true democracy. So that's where we are.
I just want to thank you, Cesar. I think this is an opportunity to actually have this dialogue at least once a month, every other week here, and us indigenous peoples, but invite you OWS peoples to come here. Because my first thought was when I went down there on October 12th or 10th, whenever we went down, is I thought of this story that an old friend of mine, Chief Jake Swamp of the Iroquois Nation, the Haudenosaunee, told me when this country formed the United States Constitution that was signed on September 17, 1787, the same day he took over Occupy Wall Street. What happened is that in Independence Hall in Philadelphia, they invited Mohawk chiefs. And as you know, it has two stories. And the Mohawk chiefs were invited, but they put them upstairs and they locked the doors. And so the Continental Congress got together, and whenever they would come to a dilemma, they would go up and feed the chiefs and ask them the question, how do we get out of this? What did you do then? And so the chiefs, in their respectfulness, thought that they were being used as a model, actually they were, is they would give them an answer. Okay, this is what we did. But see, this is the story we don't hear, is that our people were locked upstairs with the answers. I feel the same way as indigenous peoples here, and I really don't like the word indigenous. All it means is the poor people over there. That's all it means. And so, we as Native people, we have those answers. And I think your people should be coming here. Because if we go to Washington, D.C., or on K Street, that's where I think you guys should be, is K Street in Washington, D.C., actually. But if we go there and admit that you're the power, that this country is the power, then we're admitting that domination that was introduced here on this continent, when we as indigenous peoples don't even have the concept of domination, where that Capitol building is, where there's a Lenape burial ground underneath it with the graveyard still there. That's what we as indigenous peoples or native peoples shouldn't be doing. In fact, you all should be coming here to us because we have that answer. Because I always see, and I'm going to be forthright, is that Mother Earth should be first and foremost on everything, because that's where your corporations are getting their wealth. It's from taking it off the land from our people that we can't even see it out of sight, out of mind peoples, Lakota people, Dene people, anybody. But here, it's the United States. And so that's what I propose, that you all keep coming here. We keep inviting you, because when we go down there, we feel like we're being locked upstairs until at the last minute. And I've been down there a few times because I have to go down there every other day when I go past the radio station, WBAI, on Wall Street. We've been occupying Wall Street for almost 40 years now. So, and we gave you voice on Wall Street. So now we're asking you to come to us indigenous peoples and have dialogue with us and ask us the questions, because we definitely have them. Because when we talk about all the disasters and the tragedies happening with Mother Earth, all she's doing is readjusting herself so that the Washichu can be flicked off her back. And I'm saying this because it's time, as indigenous peoples have lived with her the longest. And I know as Boers people talk about, to me, jobs are responsibility, but we only have the word in Lakota for job. It's responsibility. It's taking care of each other. And I think if we remove occupy, because that's really a temporary word, and your movement, it needs to be spiritual, not religious, not dogmatic, which it is, and not patriarchal, which it is. And this is not criticism. This is my observation. I'm talking with the people down there. And I'll always tell you the bottom line of what I think. I think that's what it is, that we know already that the best that we can do right now as Native people is we live with Mother Earth, and that is the highest form of living, highest intelligence on Earth is living with Earth rather than the domination of living on Earth. And again, trying to get a piece of the American pie, but they forget all those different peoples down there in Occupy Wall Street. They forget who owns the bakery.
Thank you, Tio Kassir. One of my other elders is asking for the floor, so I have to give it to her. Maivon, would you like to close it up for us here?
Oh, I would let Osama just have a quick comment to make, because I think something very exciting happened here tonight. I think that in the last exchanges here, when I think particularly Janine, who said something about, she said, my community sent me, we have a sense of community, I belong to my community. they look after me and I have responded to them. And then when you were explaining something about just come and bow down, you know, say your peace and all, because this is what democracy is about. And then it went bang in my head. I have worked with Native Hawaiians in their independence movement for about 20 years, and I've worked with Kent among me on other indigenous issues. I don't recall ever hearing the word democracy when I'm working with indigenous groups. I hear the word community. And democracy is really so historically wedded to Western enlightenment individualistic thinking that I wonder whether that might be something to pursue, because in a way, democracy means when only 1% has and 99% doesn't, that's really not very good democracy. We should have more, and that gets to Ken's thing. We'll keep the same, but there should be a bigger spread, have real democracy, but that is still, everybody should have something as individuals, and it all adds up to a fairer world. But that's not the point. The point is, it's a connection, it's a community. And I just was, just went being in my head that, and I was always uncomfortable hearing the thing that made me the most uncomfortable with Occupy Wall Street is democracy, democracy, democracy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's what the U.S. brought to Iraq, for God's sakes, democracy, you know, with bombs and everything else. And we have to perhaps consider whether the value of the word democracy has waned, has become contaminated. And that we need to resurrect the
word
community instead.
Perhaps. All right, I'm sorry. I have to cut it off now because we really do want to hear. We want to hear some music, people. We're here to be together. And I think we have been together. I think this has been a really good discussion. And as Teokasin just said, I think we started this on October 10th, and it's something that's been ongoing here in New York since then between the community at Occupy Wall Street and the indigenous community that's here in the city. And I think it is something that we need to continue. We're going to hear from Mato now, which is just one of the best Native groups, and I mean Native to New York City. They've occupied it for quite a while.